Log Talk Radio.
Early morning fog I see, visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld for me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please. The game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway. The losing card I'll someday lay. So this is all I have to say.
March 5th, 2011, beautiful, ice cold Orlando, Florida. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. For those of you on a strict budget, the toll-free number is 877-666-9305. I got up this morning about 4:30. Got on the road. That's about a 7 hour, 6.5 hour drive from where I was in Georgia. And got here later on this afternoon and just kind of winding down and getting ready for the show, and hopefully it'll be a pretty good one. The racism issue, it's rearing its ugly head again. I thought that we were done with this topic yesterday, but now it's come back. Chris Rock, whom I used to like his show. Hey, Tesla, I'm glad you stopped in. I know you probably got a lot of stuff going on, but thank you for stopping in. I hope you have a great evening. I am here in Florida, in beautiful someplace near Orlando. But the race thing, it's back. Anybody who doesn't agree with the president, anybody who questions anything about the president at all, his policies, the color tie he's wearing, what he has for lunch, question the president in any way, shape, or form, and you're labeled a racist. The president didn't wear an American lapel pin during the campaign. Oh, anybody who brought that up was racist. Oh, the president attended a communist socialist church in Chicago on the South Side, run by a lunatic, Jeremiah Wright. Oh, no, you can't bring that up. If you do, you're racist. A new poll came out stating that, asking the question is Barack Obama the weakest commander-in-chief in U.S. history? No, that would go to Jimmy Carter, I think. But a new Reuters poll revealed a striking lack of public confidence in President Obama's ability as commander-in-chief, with just 17% of Americans describing his leadership as strong and decisive. Just 17%. Is that racist? Can a black man suck and it not be about race? Can a black man suck all to be damned as president, and he simply can he just suck? Can he just be horrible? Can he just be a really bad president and it not be about race? Jimmy Carter was arguably the worst president in modern times. Was anybody saying that to claim that he was a really bad president? Were they racist against him? Were they racist against hillbillies or rednecks or peanut farmers or Georgians? Southern Georgians? I mean, come on, let it go. What is the deal with this whole race thing? Andrea Mitchell. Poor Andrea. Andrea Mitchell, NBC, MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell, was covering the budget debate on Capitol Hill and the conflict in Libya. And she spun two serious policy issues into examples of racism. And we have a caller calling in. Let's talk about it. Who am I talking to?
You're talking to your co-host, Cool Mike.
Hey, Mike, there he is. How you doing? I thought you weren't coming in until 15 minutes into the show.
Actually, I got I get the time zone still mixed up. I'm same time as you, Eastern Standard, but I'm so used to being on Perry Steel time. So
go ahead
doing your thing, and I'll jump in when you're done. Go ahead.
All right. Let me go ahead and talk about Andrea for a minute. On the April 5th edition of Andrea Mitchell Reports, the MSNBC anchor lamented that Representative Paul Ryan, Republican Wisconsin, proposed 2012 budget would ravage Black and Hispanic communities. Representative Paul Ryan's 2012 budget released today includes reforms. What they call reforms, and along big cuts in housing assistance, job training, and food stamps, warned Mitchell, all of which would have a very big impact on particularly poor and minority communities, some say. This is what Andrea Mitchell said. So now we're back to being racist. We can't afford for folks to have a free ride anymore, and we can't afford all of these free programs and all this. We're going broke, and instead of saying, okay, look, we can't afford this anymore, you're going to have to pick yourself up by your own bootstraps, go out, actually get a job, get some training, do your own thing, live your own life, the government can't take care of you anymore, to actually have to say these things is somehow racist. Hey, Victoria Daniel, good to see you. So what is up with the cause of racism? Do they really think this is going to work? I mean, still, America is older, wiser, more mature. The whole racist thing, it has just gotten out of hand. Mike, you want to talk about it, or is there anything else you want to talk about?
I read your description, so I studied up on the show. So, right. I agree. Racism is an issue that certain media outlets just continue to bring up. And I think it's a diversion, Doc. That's my in economic times, we always know, well, we always used to know that in Middle Eastern, the sheikhs and the leaders, they used to somehow try to start some sort of confrontation with America to divert from the fact that there are economic problems at home. So it's the same thing here. We're having serious economic problems. And the only way to really divert from the failures of this administration is the ultimate card of all, race card. I saw a great comic. It had a picture of Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson standing next to each other, and they're yelling and cheering on everyone, getting them all infuriated. And they said, "We're going to end racism." And then the next comic, it was poof, they disappeared. And that's very true. Is that in Andrea Mitchell? Almost is like inciting riots because they're addressing. And I'm going to actually address this on the show in a couple weeks. We're going to. It's titled Black Owned. I put a description up there, but it just all this does is continues to tell people they can't accomplish things in the Black communities, or somehow just this whole world is in an injustice against them.
Yeah,
and it throws them off course.
Well, Nancy Pelosi has also, she's gone a step further in suggesting that by cutting the budget, by somehow saving America from a catastrophe, saving America from actually going broke. We're also on the by the same in the same breath in the on the same hand, starving seniors. Seniors are now going to starve because Republicans want to cut the budget, cut the deficit, and try to save America as a whole. I mean, I just don't get it. I mean, I just don't understand what the deal is here with all of this. I mean, are these people insane? Do they simply want to spend us into oblivion and just let the chain of events play out so that we just go broke and then nobody gets anything?
Well, it's very now, true. How can you argue that point? The bottom line is I don't even like the Republicans' budget. It cuts, but it doesn't balance. I look at it this way, Doc. I love farmers. Farmers are they're just great people. And farming is great American work. I love our seniors. I love all these people who have just done wonderful things. But all of us are responsible for this, and all of us got to bear the brunt. I don't care who we voted for 10 years ago. What the bottom line is, we need to balance the budget. We need to do more things that are going to hurt us. And, you know, when we are affected by stuff, we tend to – when we buy a car with our own money – What do we do with that car? We value it. And I just think we've continued to just spend and give to a point where mentally certain groups expect it's become their livelihood.
That's exactly.
You know, how many people have you mentored who came from those type of families where slowly but surely you saw them become young men, then you saw them become men, and ultimately take their careers and their lives on their own, to where we're burying these people. We're not allowing them to do it. And then whose fault is it? It's my fault. It's everyone's fault but their own.
No doubt. Earlier today I was listening to Andrew Mitchell's statement. First of all, Mitchell was she was mum about Representative Emmanuel Cleaver, Democrat, Missouri, when he bandied these ludicrous assertions about the 2012 Republican budget, which would slash spending by nearly $6 trillion over 10 years. Mostly by reforming unsustainable health care entitlement programs. And he said, and I quote, "It's clearly a nervous breakdown on paper, and it will do enormous damage." And he said, he went on to say, "I think to the vulnerable populations of this country," predicted the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, who added that the House budget chairman's proposed cuts to non-defense discretionary spending would devastate the poor, particularly in America's racial minority groups. What the hell is that all about? I mean, do they not understand what part of we're going broke do these people not understand? That we simply cannot afford to keep carrying people. It reminds me of a conversation I had not so long ago when I was talking about a lottery winner who won $200 million. He was rolling in money. All of a sudden, family members, friends, relatives he hadn't seen for dozens of years come out of the woodwork, and he feels obligated to take care of these folks and to buy them houses and cars and give them money for wild schemes for businesses. People who hadn't had a job or hadn't sought jobs or hadn't tried to get out and go to work and hadn't tried to take care of themselves, now he's all of a sudden taking care of them. Finally, at some point, the money runs out, and he no longer has any money to take care of these folks. They've spent all the money that he's given them on these trinkets, hadn't bothered to invest in anything, hadn't bothered to take care of their lives. Now, not only is he broke, but they're broke once again. All the money's gone. In my humble opinion, this is a metaphor for the way America's going. These folks just want to spend and spend and spend money we do not have until there is no more. And then what?
Well, Doc, the thing is that it's never going to end. We got money to burn. I mean, and that's the mindset of everybody, that something will always happen that will help us, you know, we'll get out of the economic, we'll get out of the recession, and there's just always excuses. I think in many, many ways, some countries, Ireland did this for years. They had the guilder, and even during tough economic times, they always balanced their budget. So their dollar, their denomination was strong, and we're doing the opposite. And in tough times require you know, that we tighten our belts. And I just don't understand the mindset I have is that it is really great if somebody wants to help me do something or what have you, but you have to be self-sufficient. Especially if you are married and you are a provider, this type of brainwashing. And I commented, if people want to check out the description box I have for, I think it's April 11th, 12th, or 13th, where Maxine Waters, Jesse Jackson, and Al Sharpton, they are getting insanely rich off the continued beatdown of certain races, especially the black community, were just inciting riots. And what they're not inciting is individuals to be self-sufficient, to become aggressive in their own individual goals, because basically they make their living off the, I don't know what you want to call it, but the beatdown of these people. They don't want them educated. They don't want them very self-motivated.
Well, that's exactly
right.
Because
that's how they make their living.
If they can't find a boogeyman, and no pun intended, if they can't find a racist hidden somewhere, then they don't have a job anymore. They're irrelevant. I wonder, how the hell does Al Sharpton stay? How did he ever manage to stay in the limelight after that fake Tawana Brawley rape incident where she was found in an alley somewhere? How does he even have any credibility anymore? And you know, I had a good I had a friend of mine who wrote a book a few years back, well, back in the mid 90s, detailing exactly how Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton got their money. And here's what they do. They go to a company, and one company in particular that they shook down, like the mafia used to do. Jesse Jackson went to Honda, and he said to them, "Hey, listen, here's what I want. I want $250,000 from you guys every year, or I'm going to go and boycott your company, and boycott your company as a racist company who will not hire blacks unless you support these various programs. And if you do, then I'll go ahead and say that, hey, you're doing a great job, and I won't boycott you." Now, people from inside Honda Motor Corporation leaked this out years and years ago as being one of the ways that people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson shake down companies and get funding for their limos, their airfare, and all the fancy clothes they wear, and they wind up giving very little of that money back to the communities that they so called serve, and it's just a basic mafia style shakedown. And if they did not have these racist boogeymen behind every corner, they'd be out of business.
Yeah, that's very true. Coca-Cola was also a victim when Andrew Young was running for mayor in Atlanta. And Jesse Jackson attempted to do it to Harley Davidson. It's a great story if you look it up online. I'm pretty sure it's Harley Davidson, where basically they found themselves, his gang, found themselves surrounded by individuals with pipes. And at that time, the pipes weren't made of plastic. And they made it very clear that they weren't going to be intimidated, and he can do what he wanted. But I remember the story is some guy got in his face and was swearing and said something the equivalent of, you know, you don't want to screw around with this, Jesse. And he started naming things he knew Jesse Jackson did, and he says, I got all kinds of shit I can throw. And that was the end of that. And that was kind of the end of him shaking down people. But the sad part about it is, Dr. Jones, is that how many people could you address right now that still believe Tawana Brawley was raped by a white guy? How many people, even yesterday on the show when I brought up the Duke Lacrosse case, many people sadly believe, well, you know, it's justice for what has happened with black people? Well, I mean, that's two wrongs do make a right to these people, because the individuals that they look to as leaders, you know, they're no different than Nazis. I mean, they make their living off the propaganda. It doesn't matter the political statement. It's just as long as these people cannot be smart enough to school themselves on the lies of these people, and they entrust in these people, Doc Jones, it's a losing battle. And Andrea Mitchell is the queen of trouble. She has for years, with NBC, now with MSNBC, instigated this type of stuff.
Yeah, no doubt, and I think this is the only card that they have left to play, and it's wearing way thin. Just like the blame George Bush for every single thing that has happened and will happen in the future is wearing thin with the American public. This whole racism, whitey's all wrong, and all this crap has just gotten out of hand, and I think, you know, people see through it. It's one reason why MSNBC has no ratings. I mean,
well, that's very true. I mean, this one of the positives about what we are talking about today, and we're going to bring this up in the show Black Owned. But this new generation, you know, each generation is they're the lost cause, blah blah blah, and eventually they do seem to find their way. But this generation, it's just a great generation when it comes to the racial issue. It almost doesn't exist. They don't really care what people, older people, have to say about it, and they just blow it off. And that's the best way to address it, because they're almost insulting the elders who cannot shake this. Last week, obviously, it became a very heated discussion on the Perry Steele Show. And, I mean, the bottom line is many blacks don't want to be told that they're wrong. They want to hang on to the fact that as years progress, the excuses that people are making, not necessarily just in the black community, but for people themselves, those excuses don't work. They just, because you get nowhere. And that's when you have a generation that isn't even concerned about race or, you know, just the things that this generation has been stuck in for decades. That's a sign of exactly what is taking place. And I do in fact think that the election of Barack Obama, as much as I don't like him as president, it really goes to show, because a lot of Republicans voted for Barack because they were tired of Bush, and I think it went to show that race still exists, but it's just going down as far as those excuses.
Well, yeah, and it's wearing thin, and one reason it is, I have the breakdown here of the how the 2008 voting went down. Men voted 49% for Obama, and then 48% for McCain. Women voted 56% for Obama and 43% for these. 53% now. Whites voted 43%. Is very respectable right there. Black folks voted 95%. Now, if the numbers were reversed, and not voting 5% for McCain,
they would be viewed as racist. But here you have 95% all African Americans voting being 95%, and Hispanics voted 67% for Obama to 31% for McCain. I go down the list, But the bottom line here, if it weren't for white voters as well as every other voting group voting for Barack Obama, he would not have become president. It's not blacks alone who elected Barack Hussein Obama to the presidency.
Well, it's very true. And, Doc, you've been around a little longer than I have. The race card is an issue that has been played for dumb-down of basically the black community. I remember when when they were addressing was something I saw on TV. It involved Don King, where Don King and Jesse Jackson were very good friends. So during the interview, Don King was going to use the term, I think it's very important for blacks and browns to be involved, where they were going to introduce a whole new color, where Don King was going to say the word brown. Therefore, from that point on, whenever they were interviewed, they would use the term blacks and browns, because basically it was more, they could have more push towards their affirmative action type pushing. At that time, they were pushing for affirmative action, and I'm not sure whether it was the private sector or whatever it was. But, I mean, it just goes to show how the millionaires, and let's be realistic, Don King and Jesse Jackson are insanely rich. They're rich beyond what we could ever imagine. And they are that way because they've stuck together. It's been a basic elite black country club. And here's something interesting, Jack Jones, that we'll talk more about on the other show. 2011, there is a record number of black millionaires worldwide, a record number of billionaires. Don't hear much about that from Andrea Mitchell, do we?
No, not at all. And I'll bet that she says that it had nothing to do with America, and America being the land of the free and the home of the brave either. Let's move on to our next topic. Is Obama the weakest commander-in-chief in U.S. history? That's the question folks are asking. The polls are out asking that question, and apparently just 17% of Americans describe Obama's leadership as strong and decisive, compared to 36% who believe it is indecisive and dithering. And this should come as no surprise, as the Obama administration floundered for several weeks before ever committing to international effort to rein in Colonel Gaddafi. Now they're in a stalemate. It looks like neither side is winning, and now the rebels are claiming that the UN hasn't provided enough support for their efforts to overthrow Colonel Gaddafi, and it looks like they may lose, and Obama may have his first loss on his hands because of his no-show here. What do you think?
I don't know history as you do. You have obviously studied it extensively. I love history, but you lived through a lot more than I did, and Tesla probably can talk about. From my lifetime, I'm almost scared, and it's a scary thought that this man is our commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
It's almost unbelievable that this beautiful country, that every religion, every nationality, every race has died for you, for me, for everyone listening, to think that this is how we reward them, by putting an individual this weak as our commander-in-chief. I almost don't believe it.
Well, you know, I was watching the American Experience on PBS the other night, and it had this whole last couple of months of American Experience has dealt with presidents, past presidents from George Bush all the way back to George Washington. This past American Experience presidents episode dealt with Jimmy Carter. And, of course,
it's no secret that there are a lot of parallels between the Carter administration and Carter's rise to the presidency and President Obama's. And one parallel was when the hostages were taken in Iran and held for more than a year. And apparently, Carter took his sweet time deciding whether or not to act militarily and to free the hostages. Finally, one window after another passed him by. He decided at the very last moment to act and send in Delta Force and to try to liberate the hostages. This happened to be a time when there were massive sandstorms in the Iranian area, the area of operation. And, of course, as we know, the mission failed miserably due to mechanical failures, and it was just a horrible, horrible failed mission. So what I'm getting at here is you have Democrat presidents who fail miserably time and time again when it comes to going to war and taking America to a point where you don't want to mess around with us. You don't want to get in our way. Hey, leave us alone. We'll leave you alone. You know, we're like that big guy. You know, that big guy in the video that went viral who was being threatened by this little punk. Do you know which video I'm talking about?
Yeah, the body slam.
Yeah, exactly. We're like that. You know, leave us alone. We'll leave you alone. You know, keep messing with us, and you're going to get body slammed. People like President Obama. And before him, Jimmy Carter, are weak, and people know they're weak. And we're going to be taken advantage of time and time again as a result of it.
Well, I mean, just look at what happened with Muammar Gaddafi back in the 80s. From what everyone tells me, he was on TV every day rattling his mouth about America this, America that, America this and America that. And out of nowhere, there was a bombing, and that's pretty much the end of what we heard from him until like about 2004.
And who was the president at that time? I think his name was Ronald Reagan. Somebody named Ronald Reagan?
Yep.
Called him the mad dog of the Middle East and threw down on him?
Well, clearly.
Thank you, Freedom. Yeah, I mean, President Obama took his sweet time doing this. I don't think he should have done it at all, frankly. I don't think he should. I don't think we should be involved in what's going on in Libya, and their internal strifes are their own business. That's my opinion, and you know fully well, Cool Mike, that I don't believe that America should go to war at all unless America's being threatened directly, and there are so many folks who agree that America should not be involved in Libyans' internal strife. If we were going to take Gaddafi down, we should have done so when we suspected him strongly of orchestrating the Libyan the airplane bombing and also the bombing at the disco back in the early 80s in Germany. If we were going to take him down, that's when we should have taken him down. Hey, that time has passed. Leave the guy alone. Whatever goes down in the middle of their country, let them handle it. I don't believe America should be involved. What do you think about that?
From what I read, the Reagan administration was hoping that bombing would upset the people and they would bring Gaddafi down themselves.
Yeah.
As we know throughout history, that normally does not work. It didn't work with Saddam Hussein, and it didn't work in Bosnia, etc. But whenever something like this happened, Bill Clinton was in some ways weak, too. When it was discovered that Saddam tried to sneak terrorists into Kuwait City or into Kuwait, they were going to have the celebration, and they invited President Bush there, and the celebration parade was for the liberation and what George Bush had done to help liberate Kuwait. I think it was 24, what would be equivalents to Navy SEALs, but they are from Iraq, were arrested at the border. 8 of them were arrested within. They did get past the border, but they were arrested, and they had they had explosives. Bill Clinton just sent a couple of cruise missiles. That doesn't do the job. You have to use such professional violence, and almost to a point where when every country wakes up the following morning, they're like in shock or in awe to not believe that this actually had happened. And that's our response.
I tell you. I tell you what, I believe that we're in perilous times right now. Unlike what the way we were during Reagan's 8 years in office, I believe that America needs a really strong, decisive president who is willing to make hard, tough choices for the times we live in today. And I don't believe that President Obama is that man. He is not the man to lead us at this particular time. I suppose if we were a nation that was wealthy beyond belief back in the old days, if we were a country living in peace around the world and we were all singing kumbaya and holding hands and kissing, I think, okay, maybe Barack Obama would be the man. But we live in very perilous times. America is teetering on the brink of insolvency. Wars and rumors of wars going on all over the place. And here we have this candy-ass president in office, not knowing his butt from a hole in the ground, not having any idea what the hell is going on, golfing, partying like it's 1976, hanging out, doing his thing, golfing, filling out his brackets for basketball and doing all these things and not taking care of business, not making the hard choices, not doing the things a person is supposed to do. And hey, if you question it, you're a racist. And it doesn't matter whether you're black either, because if you're black like me and you question the president, then not only you're not a racist. No, I'm not a racist. I'm a self-hating black man. I hate myself because I don't agree with Barack Obama. I'm supposed to support President Barack Obama regardless of whether he is driving us over a cliff and into a ditch with a Slurpee in hand. And, hey, it shouldn't matter to me that he's doing that. I should support him anyway because I'm black. And if I don't support him, I'm a sellout. I'm an Oreo. And you, Cool Mike, if you don't support him, then you're just plain old racist. And you know what? This guy is, he has not united America. He has not brought us together. This is all the crap he was talking about, all that kumbaya stuff about bringing us together. We all holding hands. The seas would recede. The air would clear. The world would be great. And everybody would love us. None of that has occurred. Not one single thing. All this stuff he was supposed to do. He was the Messiah. He was the man who was going to bring us all together. He was the man who was going to, there was no red states, no blue states, only the United States of America. But no, he's calling out the Republicans today, saying that they should behave like adults, that they're behaving like children, name calling them out, divisiveness everywhere. What the hell is going on? This guy has got to go in 2012. And I'm going to do whatever I can if I have to go door to door to try to help get this guy out of office. I just can't stand it anymore. America cannot afford to have Obama as the president of the United States at these very perilous times. Hey, if anybody wants to call in and talk about it. The number is 347-884-8500. Our toll-free number for those of you on a budget, 877-666-9305. Barack Obama is not the man for all seasons. He is not the man for the United States of America. He is not the man we need at this time. We need another Ronald Reagan. Unfortunately, there is none on the horizon. What the hell are we going to do?
Well, we better hope that we find somebody who is the equivalent. I mean, the bottom line is that one of the disappointments for me in the GOP is that I think when in the mid of George Bush's term, when Barack Obama, when 2006 election, it scared so many Republicans to where they just moved so far to the left themselves. Nobody really emerged as the tough Reagan. I think one of the reasons Reagan was tough is he had not won when he had been in several primaries. I think he tried to get in like in 72 or 76. I'm not really sure all the years he was in, but he had lost, but he still kept his same conservative message. And 4 years later, he did it again, and then eventually he did get the nomination. But he refused. Reagan was a leader. From the memoirs that I read online, apparently President Gerry Ford was considered a possible running mate. But in meetings, Ford wanted to be like a co-president. Reagan told him to go stick it in where his sun don't shine.
Yeah.
And then selected George Bush. And we have to come up with somebody like that. The GOP, in many, many ways, didn't really win a big election in 2010. The Democrats lost it. And we are going to find ourselves, the conservatives are going to find ourselves in the same situation if we don't get that one guy who just absolutely leads by example with solid conservative views. We must balance the budget. We all must make tough choices. And Ronald Reagan was not intimidated by the race card, period.
No,
he didn't.
No, not at all.
You know, Jesse Jackson was so hated him so much because he snubbed him. He basically said told Jesse, you know, go to hell, period.
Yeah, exactly, and rightly so. Who is it? Who can we count on? Who? I mean, nobody's even come out and said they're running yet. Who? I mean, I've been on the road most of the day. Has any Republican challenger, any Republican hopeful come out today and said, hey, I'm running against Barack Obama, I can beat him? I haven't heard it.
Well, we do have one Republican who has come out, and he's going to be a guest on this show on Saturday. Special edition. We got Fred Carter.
Can Fred mount a serious challenge?
No, I don't think so. I will ask him that question. He did work for Ronald Reagan, and he is a conservative.
Okay.
But I think in many ways Fred represents kind of the Jesse Jackson of maybe the 80s when he ran, whereas he's got the GOP is not ready for Fred Carter yet. Because he's a lot more open on social issues, but no, we need a true conservative, an Eisenhower, Nixon, Barry Goldwater type that just not intimidated by the media. Ronald Reagan, for example, you know, said put up or shut up. And another thing is Jesse Jackson was almost like, how dare you talk to me this way?
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't bother Reagan at all.
I'm thinking Chris Christie and who? Chris Christie as the VP, and who is the man who can step in there?
I like the governor of Indiana, Mitch Daniels.
Yeah.
You know, Mitch Daniels made a lot of moves that upset me several years ago, but with a balanced budget, it obviously proved to be right 5 years later, whereas Indiana is one of the few states that not only has balanced the budget, but has blossomed in jobs. Well, I don't say blossom because that means like it's booming, but Indiana has really weathered the recession as good as any state. And a lot of that is due to those choices that he had to make. And you just have to make them. You have to balance your budget.
Well, let me ask you this. If Ronald, now this is a big if, of course, if Ronald Reagan were alive today and running against Barack Obama, do you think he would win? Head to head, in debate, Barack Obama, Ronald Reagan.
Well, that's not even a
no contest.
I say this for many reasons. Number one is Barack Obama is really not that great of a public speaker. He is a sharp looking guy, but Barack Obama is talking basically to dumber people than when Ronald Reagan talked. People were much more educated. They were much more aggressive. They were much smarter. They distrusted government a lot more then, too.
Yeah.
And if you remember, Ronald Reagan had two hard years. There was a recession, and he battled and fought. But the bottom line is that a leader like Ronald Reagan got things done. Mikhail Gorbachev, who was the president of the Soviet Union, credited He said three major reasons why the Soviet Union collapsed. Number one was Ronald Reagan outspent him. Number two, Ronald Reagan. And number three, at the time, was Pope John Paul. And when you have a president who is basically bringing down an empire like the Soviet Empire, and yet obviously there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just Ronald Reagan. But Ronald Reagan was the one who stood up and said, tear down this wall.
Yeah.
Can you imagine Jimmy Carter saying that? Jimmy Carter probably wet himself when if Putin got in his face.
Well, you know what? Speaking of Jimmy Carter, one thing I thought was fascinating about the biography or the look at his presidential, at his career overall, from the time because American Experience chronicles from birth all the way until the end of the last day of the presidency. What I found fascinating about Jimmy Carter, which I did not know about, was that Jimmy Carter worked against his own party to cut the deficit, to stop spending, and it helped seal his fate when it came to re-election time, because the majority of the folks in his own party went against him. They didn't want him to be re-elected as president because he was cutting spending, cutting programs. It was almost as if, in many ways, Jimmy Carter was a Republican and when it came to the deficit. I found that to be a fascinating thought, and now I think I understand why Barack Obama refuses to deal with the deficit and cut spending, because I believe that history will repeat itself and a great many Democrats will turn against Barack Obama in his reelection bid. And now you have people all over calling for Hillary to run against Obama, and they're even touting how it would all play out in the end, and they have the pundits now have Hillary beating Barack Obama in a head-to-head contest, and Hillary winning the nomination over Barack Obama. It's all over the news for the last couple of days once Obama announced that he plans to run. Folks want Hillary now to challenge him and run against him, which I find to be very telling, because most of these folks are Democrats who want Hillary to step in and take this guy out of the picture, because they believe that she's much more level-headed and much easier to deal with, and more importantly, the Democrats believe that Hillary has much more experience, world experience, legislative experience than Barack Obama. And I find that this whole thing, the way it plays out, to be fascinating. She says that she's not going to stay in the Secretary of State's job. She says she wants to be out of politics. What do you think? Does anybody think that she'll run against Barack Obama, or that she'll mount a challenge? Because right now she says that she wants out of politics, but folks are actually calling for her, thinking about drafting her to run against President Obama, and Democrats at that.
Doc, what do you think of the chances that Hillary Clinton is telling the truth when she says that she wants to get out of politics?
I don't know.
Clintons are equivalents to Richard Dade Haley. They are a machine in itself. She was going to run against Barack regardless. You can't keep the Clintons down long. And
yeah.
This is, I don't mean, I am an independent. I'm not necessarily, I'm a very conservative. But I don't like slamming on Democrats unless they deserve. But, you know, you fire a gun in the air, the first people to run for the door and whatever are going to be Democrats.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what you're saying. They're grabbing the first life preserver and they're jumping.
Yeah.
Instead of looking around to see the problem or to try to tackle the shooter, this is the Democratic Party in its finest hour right here, and it is just imploding in many ways, as the Republican Party kind of did in 2005. It's just collapsing from the inside. Infighting is taking place, and it may at this point. We know we have a lot of time until the actual game can be decided, but it may at this point be just the start of a total collapse, because there are some problems addressing this nation that not only this nation but around the globe, that Barack, they may seal Barack's fate for him.
I wonder how the conversation went down when she was offered the Secretary of State job, when she and Bill were sitting behind closed doors, and she said, you know what, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get inside. I'm going to do this job. I'm going to gather up all the dirt I can get on this clown, and then I'm going to play along like, hey, it's all good, and all that's happened is water under the bridge, and then, bam, as soon as he screws up enough, I'm going to step in, take him out, and I will be back in the White House, Bill, and it's a done deal. This is why I'm going to hang with this guy, so I can get all the goods on him. He's going to screw up. He has no experience. He doesn't know what the hell is going on. He's like way, way more liberal than I am. He's far, far more liberal than I am. And America's not going to stand for it. We got this in the bag. We lost this round. We're coming back. Barack Obama's toast. I believe that if Hillary decides to run this time, she's got him. That 3 a.m. and that 3 in the morning call, he didn't answer the call. She was right. I would love to see her run, and then I'd love to see her get stomped on by whoever the Republican nominee is.
Well, one of the probably what didn't happen in a long time in politics that did happen when Barack ran against a Clinton lost. And let's be realistic. The Clintons have almost unlimited resources, and when it comes to politics, they're smart. They get caught lying, yet they convince 80% of the planet they're not lying. I mean, that's the ultimate politician, if you you know. And I think this was their plan all along. I wouldn't put it past them if Bill's working a lot of his magic. The Clintons are very self-absorbed, and they're just slick with the moves. How many years did Bill Clinton lie before he finally got called out on it? But yet it really didn't hurt him.
No, and we have a saying in the military, if you're a really good liar, if you're an exceptional liar, you are a liar of Clintonian proportions. That's the title you get if you're a really good liar. You are a liar of Clintonian proportions, and I tell you what, those folks can lie. And I tell you what, I hope and I'm going to get down on my knees and pray later on tonight that Hillary is lying her old ass off about running against Barack Obama or wanting to get out of politics, because I'd love to see the fight go down. And unfortunately, I got to admit that during the presidential campaign, during the primaries, I rooted against Hillary in favor of Barack Obama because I just couldn't stand Hillary. If I had to pick between those two, it was going to be Obama, because I just couldn't stand Hillary. Hillary thought that the nomination was hers. She thought the presidency was hers. She thought it was her turn, and nobody was going to get in her way, especially this upstart Barack Obama. He wasn't going to get in the way. This job was hers to have, and you know what? I felt turned off by that, and I rooted for Barack Obama against Hillary, knowing full well that he wasn't going to win because, hey, he's come out of nowhere. I mean, the guy doesn't have any experience. He doesn't know what the hell is going on, but I was wrong. I was dead wrong. And unfortunately, Hillary lost. Now I'm feeling like, you know what, if I had the choice right now, if I had to choose between these two clowns, it certainly would be Hillary.
Well, in the election that decided the election of Barack Obama of 08, the primary, it's kind of a weird scenario because throughout history, we always tend to go with the devil we know rather than the devil we don't know. And clearly, here, we went with President Obama. But I'll tell you, Doc Jones, it's my personal opinion. I think Barack Obama was planted. The powers that be that control George Bush just basically puppeted Barack Obama. He's a president only by name, and I don't believe he's controlling things. And I think those people that are really sense gravitational pull in America, and things are on edge where they really don't want to see an American individual revolution to whereas the people really, really take their country back. And I think that there's kind of a backing away to whereas they're not going to they're not going to back Barack Obama. And I think Barack Obama is going to be helpless. He's got all those people that wished him to the top. They're pulling him down just as fast. And that's Democrats for you. As much as I complain about Bush, and you and I have debated this, the Republicans stuck with George Bush. Look at everybody jumping ship already. You've got 2 years to go, and they're jumping off. I mean, what a bunch of pussies.
They're jumping ship because the guy is embarrassing the Democrat Party. First of all, he's not doing what they want him to do. Either he's not moving as fast as they want him to. Plus, he's embarrassing them because, you know, he's out golfing all the time. I mean, he's got two wars going on, and he's out golfing. He's got two wars going on, and he's having parties, throwing lavish parties in the White House, hanging out with Stevie Wonder, hanging out with Earth, Wind, and Fire, hanging out with all these luminaries, all these stars, all these actresses and actors. He's going on vacation every 3-4 weeks, and he's got men and women, Americans, dying in Afghanistan and still in Iraq, and now he's got us involved in Libya, and he's still partying like a rock star, as if hey, it's all good, it's all great, and I believe that there are a great many Democrats who are embarrassed by this, by what he's doing here. Yeah, of course they're anti-war. Of course they don't want to go to battle. They don't want to have anything to do with that. But I'm sure they're embarrassed by the fact that the President of the United States seemingly doesn't give a damn about Americans fighting in wars and dying.
It's almost like spitting in the face of our fighting forces.
Yep.
And you and I know, take the military very seriously. You obviously have a much better grasp of it than I do. But number one is he is partying with like a rock star because he's with the rock stars. So people that these wars don't affect them. They're not losing the loved ones. I know you as a Marine, every one of those boys is probably in some ways an adopted son, even the ones you don't know that are hurt, injured, or killed. And I feel the same way. I feel like they're my brothers. And the party is in deep trouble when even someone worse than Harry Reid and Pelosi, Dennis DeConcinich, is calling for looking into possible impeachment. You got the most liberal person who you think under any circumstances would be backing Barack Obama. What does that tell you about this party? They're just weak. I mean, they're just really showing how weak they are.
No doubt. And in addition to that, it's been rumored for the last 6 months that Kucinich will run against, is considering running against Barack Obama, challenging him in the primaries, and from what Kucinich has said about looking into impeachment proceedings, hey, those rumors aren't that far off the mark. We have 1 minute left. Wrap it up for me, Mike, and then we're out of here.
Well, Doc, thank you very much for allowing me to co-host and to learn your system and format. I've really enjoyed it. And for everyone, this is hopefully the start of some great things. Thank you again.
Yeah, cool.
And remember, we need callers. The show isn't about us. It's about you.
Yeah.
And, bring a friend. One friend makes two friends, makes three friends, and we just grow from there. Doc, I'll try to be with you tomorrow, but if not, I'll do the best I can in taking over your show. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. Thank you. And thank everybody for listening, everybody who came into the chat room, everybody listening on your computers and downloading on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a great evening, and I really do appreciate y'all being here and listening to the show. And do indeed call in. We really love to have you call in. Voice your opinion. There's a toll-free number if you'd like. And, hey, call in. We'd love to hear from you. It's not about us. Like Cool Mike said, it's about you. Hey, good night, Mike. Good night, everybody. Thank you all for listening, and God bless you all.